Good evening, brothers and sisters. Sorry we are late because we are new to new locations. So they have to travel and find their ways. And also, as usual, Friday evening, it's always a bit of a traffic jam. Sorry for the delay. And tonight's topic, before we mention Brother Toh takes over, next Sunday, not this Sunday, next Sunday, 30th of July, that one will be the commencement of the Parita chanting. So that will be 31st, so it is Saturday, sorry, 30th. So the Chief Reverend Lama Ratana, together with other seven monks, will be here to officiate the commencement of this Parita chanting during this Wasa period. So make yourself available here. And okay, tonight's topic is importance of understanding the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha. And I think that this is a very important point that we have to keep in mind, so that with the correct and right understanding, then only are we able to progress in our practice and realize the final objective as what the Buddha had wanted us to realize. So without taking much time, we shall now start off by taking refuge and observing the precepts.
Okay, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the Buddha Dhamma chanting. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho sanghang namami. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Viramani Sikka Samadhiyami Adinadana Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami Musawada Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami Suramiraya maca pamadatana Viramani Sikha Padang Samadhiyami Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect, Lord Buddha. Okay. Very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Once again, we meet after almost a month. Tonight, we must apologize, like what Brother T told you just now. We were late because we had a new venue to go to have our dinner. So the venue is a bit further than new to us. So we just arrived late, about half an hour late. But we were only 20 minutes late when you are here. So hope you understand. Anyway, tonight's topic is, like Brother Tay say, is very important, very useful. Importance of understanding the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha. The reason why I chose this topic was because I feel this is a very important topic. If you can develop a clear understanding, you can progress very fast along the path of Dhamma. Then your cultivation become meaningful. You don't have to waste a lot of time to do all those meditation that may not give you the result, the desired result, or the appropriate result. Because a lot of Buddhist cultivation, if you are not careful, you end up actually doing a lot of things that doesn't benefit you in the long run. You may know a lot of theory, a lot of concept, a lot of idea about the teaching, but because there is no clear, proper understanding, you cannot develop the seriousness to develop the actual cultivation. When you don't understand, you can never be serious. But when you see the importance and understand the great beauty of this teaching, and understand the importance of this teaching, then you become very different. Your cultivation become very different. You become very serious, dead serious, because your faith is very strong, your virya is very strong. And this will drive you to develop the appropriate cultivation. Then based on your actual understanding of the real Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha, you will not have to go all the diversion. You don't have to go through all the unnecessary wrong way or deviation and diversion that lead you all over, and yet you never come to the true understanding. Means you do bits and pieces of what people tell you. And by doing that, you think you are meditating, you think you are cultivating, you think you are a true Buddhist walking the path of Dhamma. And hoping one day you will also realize or awaken. Through many years of sharing and observation, I realized that true understanding of the real Buddha Dhamma as taught by the Buddha is not easy to come by. That's why I chose today's topic. The original topic chosen by Brother Gan was, even though he put at the end there, or whatever topic that Brother Teo deemed appropriate, he suggested the first one was understanding the importance of invoking the power of truth in cultivation. When I received that, I reflected on it. Then I realized there is not much use because this particular topic is very limited in its scope. And during the Buddha's time, he did use power of truth, but not in the sense that it helped much in the cultivation. He used it under different circumstances. As I had promised Brother Gan, I say I will talk about this particular topic a little bit before we go into the main topic. So I have this book with me, this Chief Reverend K. Sri Damananda, our late chief, The Daily Buddhist Devotion. There are many relevant sutta that talks about how the Buddha invoked the power of truth. Excuse me. One of the sutta that talks quite a bit about it is Mahajaya Mangala Sutta or Gatha. So under this particular Gatha, the Buddha invoked power of truth for joyous victory. So I read to you the first stanza. Mahakarunika Nato Hitaya Sabbe Paninang and all the rest. The English translation is the great merciful Lord, which is our Lord Buddha, all compassionate, all wisdom and merciful Lord, for the good of all living beings, means out of love for all living beings, have cultivated all perfections and attain the supreme enlightenment of a Sammasambuddha. Then he invoked, by the power of these words of truth, may joyous victory be mine. So he always used it this way. Then the other one is, he who enhanced the happiness of the Sakya, who was victorious at the foot of the Bodhi tree, means again Sakyamuni Buddha, likewise, may there be victory for me, and may I ever be blessed. So he invoked power of truth in this manner. Then the third one is the stanza, I revered the Buddha, highest jewel, best balm ever, beneficial to God and man. By the Buddha's glory safely, may all obstacle and suffering cease. So these are all power of truth. Then the next one is about the triple gem. He said, whatsoever diverse precious jewel there may be in this universe, there is no jewel even equal to the Buddha, means the first of the triple gem. By this truth, let me be prosperous. So it's not so much about cultivation. So for the other two jewels, it's the same. By this truth, let me be prosperous. Then there is also on the refuge. He said, there is no other refuge for me. The Buddha is my matchless refuge. By this word of truth, may joyous victory be mine. So whatever battle you undergo or determine, you can invoke power of truth. Means you must be very sincere in the understanding of this refuge and all those things. Then you must have cultivated it long enough. Then it becomes a part of your understanding. Then you can invoke the power of this truth. There is no other refuge for me. Similarly, he said, the Dhamma is my matchless refuge. By this truth, may joyous victory be mine. So these are the initial main uses. Then the other one is Angulimala Sutta. You know Angulimala, he was a murderer, or he killed almost near to 1,000 living beings, human beings. Then later on, after he met the Buddha, he actually understood the true Buddha Dharma. That's why understanding the true Buddha Dharma is taught by the Buddha is very important. Then he decided to follow the Buddha. He gave up all his earlier wrong view and all those things. Then he determined to keep the precepts, not to kill and all those things. And because of that, his parami ripened. Because of his past parami, the condition is there, conducive. So he was able to overcome whatever hindrance or obstruction that actually hinders him, even when he decided to take the refuge and develop the renunciation and become a monk under Sakyamuni. He went through a very difficult life, very tough, because people just want to take revenge against him, and people don't believe him. They stone him, they abuse him, and did so much thing to him. But he endured them all. Then later on, he became an arahant. And because of that, he has love, he has compassion. Then one day, he saw a lady undergoing labor and was very severe in the condition. Chances are, the mother may not survive, and the child too may not survive. So Angulimala, out of love and compassion, determined to help. But he didn't know how to do it, so he went to the Buddha. And the Buddha advised him, ever since you become an arahant, you have not violated your precepts and all those things. Why don't you invoke the power of truth to help people? And then it worked. That's why this famous Angulimala Paritta is always chanted for safe delivery. People believe that it can bring about very powerful response. So I read to you Angulimala Paritta. Angulimala says, "Sister, from the time of my being born into the noble birth of an arahant, I do not know of myself having purposely deprived any living creature or living being of its life. By this truth, may you be saved. May there be safety for both you and your child in your womb." And because of that invocation of truth, the child was born without complication, and both the mother and the baby survive. So these are the sources from this sutta that you can have on power of truth. Because these are nature's law. So if you have faith, you have understanding, you can invoke power of truth. The other example was during the early day when the Bodhisattva was cultivating the perfection of the virtue of patience. You remember that time Kondanya? He was the king at that time of Kaliga, I think, if I'm not wrong. Then the Bodhisattva at that time was a yogi trying to perfect this virtue of patience, Kanti. Then this king was so unhappy because a lot of his wife or concubine that follow him. They went and listened to him. They find him so interesting and so amusing. Then he heard that this Bodhisattva or the ascetic was cultivating patience. He said, "Oh, you are cultivating patience." He said, "Let's see how strong your cultivation is." So this king, he decided to severed off all the four limbs of the Bodhisattva. Then the Bodhisattva say, "No problem, by all means, you go ahead." Then after he severed all the four limbs, he invoked the power of truth. Because ever since he cultivated this perfection, he has never arise even a single thought of unhappiness or anger when he is going through life to develop this perfection. Then he invoked the power of truth, is it? By the power of this truth, is it? May my limbs come back to me. And really, all the four limbs came back to him. That's why that king panicked, came down and paid respect. Then the Bodhisattva to be at that time said, "You don't worry. You, in fact, you have done me a great favor to enable him to finally perfect this virtue of patience or kanti." Then he said, "In future, you will be the first living being I will take across when I become the Sammasambuddha." That's why Kondanya became a Sotapan immediately after the Buddha proclaimed the first sermon, the Maccakapavattana Sutta. So these are the various usage, but it's not so much towards the daily cultivation, or to help you in your cultivation. That's why I say the scope is limited. So that will cover the part that I promised Brother Gan. So now I will go into the topic proper. So if you look at the heading, importance or understanding the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha, we will have to ask ourselves this question. What is actually the Buddha Dharma? What is your understanding? Dharma is what? What is Dharma? Dharma is? louder. Truth. Good. That's why it's called truth. Nature's truth. Nature's truth. True. So this is what Dhamma is all about. So actually, what the Buddha taught is just truth. But the essence of his teaching is what? Four Noble Truths. Four Noble Truths. Why is it called Noble Truth? Not ultimate truth. Not universal truth. Yeah, very good. Because the word noble, when you realize this truth, it will make you noble one. You become noble ones. Noble ones. Or enlightened ones. So in the olden days, the Aryas, the noble ones, they are called enlightened beings because they are very noble in all aspects of their life. They are very noble in their virtue, in their understanding of life, in the way they communicate, in the way they act, and in the way they arise their thought process, and in the way they have relationship and dealing with fellow living beings. So the essence of the Buddha's teaching, which is the Four Noble Truths, is essentially the core teaching that you have to understand. When you understand this Four Noble Truths, it's like you understand the secret of life. You know what is secret of life, isn't it? When you know the secret, you can solve the mystery. It's like the secret. S-E-R, spelling. Secret. C-R-A-T. E-D, oh, sorry. thank you. Kreatia. Oh, okay. Secret of life. My English is very lousy. Forgive me. So when you understand the secret of life, you can resolve its mystery. Means life mystery can be understood. Means you are no longer deluded. You have clear understanding. That's why when you unfold the secret of life, you understand life, you know how to live life. So this Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching, is what the Buddha Dhamma is all about. all his other teachings spin off from this Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths, as you have already gone through, they relate to life, all aspects of life, both the mundane and the supramundane aspect. So this is very complete. The Buddha, because of his great wisdom, he was able to summarize all of truth, all of life, into just Four Noble Truths. Summarize. Whatever that you want to understand within life, they are all summarized within this Four Noble Truths. Means all of mundane and supramundane aspect of life, they are all here. The first Noble Truth, as we all know, talk about the Noble Truth of suffering. Okay? So what is that truth? That truth talks about the realities of life and existence. He said, as we go through life, living beings, we have to confront this 8 reality. These are mundane reality. Birth, old age, sickness and death. When you are with people whom you don't like. Then when you are separated from your loved one and prized possession. Then when you cannot get what you want. Or your expectation in life are not met. Then he said, in short, when you deludedly believe that this 5-year form and mind, the so-called human being, is what you are. So the 5 aggregates of grasping, upadana khandhas, they are the cause of all suffering. So this reality of life and existence, you reflect into it. It covers all aspects of life within the mundane, mundane aspect. Then we have the second Noble Truth. So first Noble Truth talk about realities of life and existence, means all of mundane reality. Realities of life and existence. Then after that, the Buddha went into the second Noble Truth. What is the second Noble Truth? Yeah? He said, this one is reality of life and existence with regards to dukkha. Huh? Means the Noble Truth of suffering. The 8 conditions that can give rise to suffering. Second Noble Truth, the Buddha explained the cause behind. He said, whatever suffering that you encounter through the first Noble Truth reality, there is a cause behind all this suffering. And what is the cause? Huh? The cause of suffering is what? Huh? Cause of suffering is what? Cause of suffering is? Grasping, clinging, born of self-delusion. So when there is self-delusion, you will grasp. You will cling. That's why the Buddha called it craving. Craving born of self-delusion. These are mundane. Within the mundane. Yeah. All of mundane existence will be covered under the first 2 Noble Truths. Then the third Noble Truth, the Buddha zero in on the supramundane. Third Noble Truth, the Buddha said, suffering need not be. If you understand his teaching, if you develop this type of wisdom or insight knowledges. So, cessation of suffering of dukkha, which is the realization of Nibbana. Is possible in the here and the now before you die. Then, after that, the most important one is the fourth noble truth. This one is where you want to zero in tonight. What is the fourth noble truth? The Buddha not only tell you that enlightenment in the here and the now or Nibbana can be realized. He even teach you how to develop it. He said there is a path, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. If you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. Path leading to the end of all suffering. All dukkha. So this one is the most important. This is where we start our cultivation. So Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation, is what you need to understand. With regards to Noble Eightfold Path, you will have to go back to the first sermon. You remember the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta? Immediately after his enlightenment, not long later, he went and met up with the five ascetics. Then he proclaimed the first turning of the Dhamma wheel, his first teaching into our this planet Earth. He called it the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, or first sermon. So this first sermon also essentially is about the Four Noble Truths. First sermon, or Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. So this first sermon essentially is also the Four Noble Truths. That's why he said avoid the two extreme, Four Noble Truths and its three turning. You remember? The Buddha mentioned, even he himself, the Bodhisattva at that time, if he had not understood the Four Noble Truths in his three turning or 12 mode, he cannot proclaim to be the enlightened one. So this is where the whole teaching lies. So when you talk about understanding the Buddha Dharma as taught by the Buddha, we have to zero in on this three turning. So this three turning, as I've explained before, it gives rise to the three types of corresponding wisdom. Every turning corresponds to one wisdom. First turning is Suttamaya Panya. What type of wisdom is that? Wisdom born of? Wisdom born of what? Hearing the Sutta, which is the discourse of the Buddha, the teaching. That's why it's called the first turning, where he proclaimed the teaching. So first turning, if you listen to the proclamation and you awaken, then you have this wisdom. We call it Suttamaya Panya. Wisdom born of hearing the Sutta. Nowadays you can read. Then you can even listen to the recording and other things. Then second turning, the Buddha said, after you have listened or read or do whatever study, if you still cannot awaken, then you go to the second turning. So second turning, the Buddha actually got four guidelines. One guideline for each truth. He said you must develop the understanding of this second turning to develop the second type of wisdom called Cintamaya Panya. Means wisdom born of reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into this Four Noble Truths as proclaimed by the Buddha. That's why he gives you the pointer. This Noble Truth of suffering, which is the first Noble Truth, he said, is to be understood. Then you inquire, why did the Buddha say that? And how can I understand that? Then from there, through your reflection, contemplation, and inquiry, you will develop the understanding. And this will stabilize what you have heard and learned before. Then as you reflect and contemplate, you stabilize this understanding, then you assimilate them in and it becomes stable. We call it the second turning wisdom, Cintamaya Panya. Then when you are ready with the first two turning wisdom, it will prepare you to receive truth, to awaken. So the third turning wisdom is all about meditation. That's why it's called Bhavana Maya Panya. Bhavana is meditation, the cultivation. Then after that, when you are already ready to receive truth, any of the three turning can actually trigger enlightenment in the here and the now. So this is a very powerful teaching. That's why the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. When you want to understand Dhamma, you have to reflect and contemplate until very, very clear, like what my teacher used to advise me, Achayandra. Then after that, when you are very clear, you can put it into cultivation. Then you can actually save time. You don't have to walk the wrong way, the wrong path. Or in Mandarin, they say, no need to walk the yin wang lu. Yin wang lu. Means take you to Holland and come back. Then you don't benefit. You get into big trouble. You go one big round, yet you never reach your destination. So the three turning, corresponding three type of wisdom, is very important. That's why under the teaching, the Buddha also subdivide this teaching. Yeah? This one will give you the three type of wisdom. Huh? Oh, wisdom. Then the Buddha also subdivide this Dhamma into three phases. He said there are three phases of Dhamma. If you don't understand this, it's very difficult for you to progress. Phase one is what? Huh? What is Pariyatti? Huh? Pariyatti is what? I put in another color. Pariyatti is what? Phase one of Dhamma. Yeah? Learning of the teaching. So this is the learning part. Yeah? Learning. So this learning is the teaching. This one is first and second turning. You develop the clear understanding of what this Buddha Dhamma is. That's why I say importance of understanding the Buddha Dhamma. So when you already understood in a very clear manner what this teaching is, then only you can go to phase two. Phase two is what? What is Patipatti? Good. Put the teaching into practice or cultivation. Put the teaching into cultivation. Or sometimes people like the word practice. So that this teaching become a living reality. It become a part of you. Can follow? Otherwise it's theory. You know, but you cannot do. No point. That's why this part is very important. Able to put this teaching into practice will bring about the true cultivation. You will not waste time. You will not be taken to Holland. You will not do all those things that people tell you to do. But as long as you don't have this understanding, you cannot put into practice. Then the third one is the most beautiful third phase. What is the third phase? Pativeda. Pativeda is the fruition of your hard work. Fruition. of your hard work, so that you get to, you get to reap, reap the fruition of the noble life. Oh, sorry. That one become right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Reap the fruition of the noble life. Means you get to live the life of an enlightened one. Okay, so with this, it's very easy to start your cultivation. So now we will start our cultivation. Just as I mentioned, this Noble Eightfold Path is the path that leads to the end of all suffering. So this is the meditation, understand? This is the meditation. So Noble Eightfold Path, the first path factor is what? What is the first path factor? First path factor. Good. Right view. Samadhi. Or right understanding. So this one have three. Right view with regards to one. First one is law of karma. Then law of the mind. Then law of dhamma, means all the other truth, the essential teaching of the Buddha that the Buddha has taught. The law of karma is the first one that we have to go in and zero in, and this one we have covered many rounds. I think very easy for you to understand. We don't have to waste too much time on this. Like the Buddha said, you have to reflect every day, contemplate the five daily contemplation. The first four is regarding the first noble truth reality. The first three is this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick, and finally die before it, because it has not gone beyond old age, sickness, and death. Because this body is just element, not you, go the way of nature. That's why he said this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick, and die. And these are realities. First number two reality. And don't be deluded by it. So if you don't have delusion, you reflect and contemplate, then you understand that this is not me. Element cannot be me. It go the way of nature. It is a common reality within mankind. Not only me getting old, sick, and die. Everybody gets old, sick, and die. Every form have to go through that experience. It goes the way of nature. As long as you live life long enough, you have to confront this reality of birth, old age, sickness, and death. So when you confront them with understanding, you do not lament, because you know this is not you. This one, element, goes the way of nature. Follow nature's law. Then you don't have to worry about this body getting old, getting sick, and dying. That's why you don't have suffering anymore. You don't have to foolishly or deludedly attach to it, where you know it's not you. Condition arising, element, follow condition. When condition ceases to be, it ceases, it disperses. Then the fourth contemplation is whatever that we think we own, our loved ones, our prized possession, they are impermanent. They are of the nature to arise when condition is there. When condition ceases to be, it will cease. It will separate from you. So separation is a reality because of the conditioned world, because of the universal characteristics of impermanent. So that you wake up to this reality. So as you contemplate and reflect every day on this reality of separation from loved one and prized possession, then when you confront them, you are not disturbed by it. You are not affected by it. You can be at peace with it. Because you realize that all these are conditioned arising entity, impermanent. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity that you can hold on to, grasp on to, and cling on to and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. This is a delusion. Then you will not be deluded by this reality when you confront them. But the fifth one is the most important. The fifth contemplation, what is it? Ah, very good. We are all born of our karma, the Buddha said. Heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. And you reap what you sow. Do good, because good. Do evil, because evil. From here, the teaching starts. That's why the advice of the Buddha also comes from this right view with regards to the law of karma. Because he said, if you reflect every day, if you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, you are what you are because of your karma. Means what? Your entire life or existence, they all depend on karma. So what must you do? Ah, take care of karma. How do you take care of karma? You follow the advice of the Buddha. Avoid all evil. Do good. And purify your mind to develop the wisdom not to be deceived, not to be deluded. The Buddha didn't even just like tell you to avoid all evil. He advised you to understand the deep meaning. Why must you avoid all evil? Because you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported. You are what you are because of your karma. You reap what you sow. So whatever evil you do out to living beings, or even nature, it will come back to you. Understand? Huh? You reap what you sow. So when you have this understanding, you look at the advice of the Buddha, then you realize the danger of not following his advice. And his advice is not just avoid evil. He used the word sabbe. You know. What is sabbe? All evil. Sabbe papasa or sabbe papasa akaranang. Is it all evil you must avoid? You know. Because you reap what you sow. All this will come back to you. So when you understand the importance of this advice, when you have reflected on this nature's law, what must you do? You will change the way you live your life. You will never, never allow any of this negativity or karma to arise. Means you were determined to avoid all evil. All evil you were determined to avoid. Means you can never cheat people anymore, deceive people anymore, say things that can hurt people anymore. You will appreciate life. You will have love, compassion, goodness, kindness. You will never cause any misery to fellow living beings or even your loved one. You will not neglect your duty. You will sacrifice on their behalf. You will take care of them, provide for them, sacrifice for them, do whatever you can in the name of love, compassion, and doing your duty as a parent. Then your duty as an employer, or as an employee, or as a child. Then your relationship with other people too, you cannot take advantage of it. You cannot deceive, cheat, and even abuse. So you cannot through delusion arise the evils of greed, hatred, and delusion to become selfish, to become possessive, to harass people, to develop all the anger, the hatred, the violence that cause so much suffering to fellow living beings and your loved one. When you do all this, these are evil, root of all evil, create negative karma, cause you to fall. And what happened is, law of karma, they will come back to you. You reap what you sow. Then you will become the victim. You will experience all this that other living beings or fellow living beings will do back to you. You have to reflect my life. Do I want this to happen to me? If I don't want this to happen to me, I will heed the advice of the Buddha. Means when you cultivate based on the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, what did the Buddha recommend? He said you have to keep your precept, remember? That's why you will never violate your precept. Your cultivation has to reach that state. And most Buddhists never have this understanding. They just say, ayo, this precept sometimes, huh? Is it like very messy rather? So much of this precept, not easy. Then they think it's a burden. Then they try to compromise. They say, I think middle path, a little bit, okay. Then you don't understand the Buddha Dharma. You don't see the danger of violating these precepts. Who violate precept? I already taught you. You have to reflect and contemplate. Who killed the first precept? I undertake the training rule to abstain from all killing or causing harm to fellow living beings. Who will do that? And evil people, violent people, angry people, selfish people, deluded people, with all the three evil roots. That's why when you violate this precept, you have the evil root, and you are evil, you create negative karma. That's how you fall. And you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and you are what you are because of it. So in future, when you take birth, wherever there is condition, people will kill you, will harm you. Then you don't complain, why me, and all things. Then even as parents, if we neglect our children, in future you take birth, you will have parents that will neglect you. You will have parents who also become irresponsible. Then you cannot understand. You say, why my father like that? Drink, gamble, abuse my mother, don't take care of the household. Very irresponsible. Because in the past, you also did that to your children. That's why you reap what you sow. So if you want to avoid all these conditions when you come as a living being, when you take birth, do not allow all this to happen. Then there's one story that I want to share with you. That's why when you understand all this, you will never violate all this. You will have a lot of goodness, a lot of kindness. You are incapable of negativity. You will be very gentle in your approach to people. How you communicate with people, how you deal with people. You will be very sincere, very truthful. Full of love, compassion, no more negativity. So this story that I want to share was the Monday incident. I went out to have my breakfast. I actually went to a Malay store. Then I like the bihun and the mee goreng. The fried rice also quite nice as well. Then they sell curry, like nasi lemak and all things. And as I was there to take my whatever fried bihun and mee, there was a cat, a stray cat. Very funny, He came very nicely. He rubbed my leg here. I was wearing this long pants. The cat was able to do it in such a nice way that you feel very good. Then I told the cat, okay, enough, it's okay, I just want to buy something. Then after that, he didn't disturb me. Then I took my food, I went to the bench outside. There were a lot of people, even when I was buying the thing, five or six of us there, but he came near me. Then when I was having my meal, outside there was a lot of people. But this cat, I didn't know, he followed me. Then he was 2 feet away from where I sit. Quiet like that. Look at me. Didn't even meow. Like hint to you to give food. I didn't really pay much attention. until I was about to finish my food, no, then I realized this cat is so obedient, no? So like got affinity, you know, Yu Yan Fen in Mandarin, no? So normally my nature understand affinity or karma and all that, is it? Even though you born as a cat, you must have parami in the past, otherwise you cannot have this type of quality of mind even as a cat. Then I decide to like want to give him something. Then I realize I finished my plate, no, clean, no, where the meat was so nice and everyone. So I got nothing left. Then all of a sudden from the nature I say, Qin Sai Yan Yun, you understand Cantonese or not? Qian Si Ying Yan. Because our affinity condition is there, and things is just the way it is. Then this nature understand, no? Then you know what I did? I went back to the store, I looked. Wow, I saw all the fish, you know, goreng one, nice one. Just nicely goreng. Then there's another two plates, smaller one. I said, I told the Malay lady, I said, I nak beli ikan, I said, I nak kecil, ya. Ah, tuan, ini tak bagus. Because this one, they say, is smaller one, they want to put in the chili one, they say, they left it to cool down already, one. Ini sudah sejuk untuk buat sambal. Then, yang bagusnya besar, ya, I say, baru goreng, ya. Oh, I say, this cat must have good palami. So finally, I bought that fish, oh. It cost me 5 ringgit. Oh. My whole nasi thing on it, I think less than 4 ringgit, 3 ringgit with the telur, everything. Then I took the fish. Then I first thing I did was I clear the head. I know they like the fish head. I passed the fish head now. Wow, I saw the cat slowly eating, enjoying. Oh, it's a good part of me. Then I take out some more. Or the fish meat and all things. Then I eat a bit. I eat, I think, less than a quarter. 3/4 I fed to him. Oh, he was having a good meal. And he never make any noise. He just, of course, he enjoyed the food and all those things. So that's why parami means they have past affinity and condition. That's why they can receive this. Even born as a cat, you don't worry. Because you have this parami. But it doesn't mean that I want that type of parami, so that later I become cat, I also got food. No. For my case, it's different. But for most people, if you do that, you don't worry. Even as a cat, you are blessed. Then when I was in Europe, my recent trip, I saw this dog. I tell you, the way the master treat them, most of them are ladies. I tell you, that high-end area like Harrod and all those things, you got no chance to go in for some people. But this cat, this dog can go in and dress so nicely, you know, the way with all the perfume and the hairdo, everything, I tell you. They are so blessed. So, Dhamma is like that. Do not underestimate whatever goodness you do. That's why the Buddha said, any goodness, any kindness that you can develop, you must develop them. That's why all evil you must avoid. You make sure this go into you so that you are incapable of negativity. So that when you talk to people, you are different. You cannot raise your voice and do all those things. You cannot have deceiving thoughts. You cannot get angry, unhappy, and throw your tantrum and all things. But you feel for people. But you reap what you sow. In future, you do all this heedlessly, you will get back all this. This is karma. So cultivation should reach that point that you cultivate with understanding. Then you realize the First Noble Truth is so powerful. Even let's say you accumulate good karma, good merits, you can avoid all evil, do good. Then a lot of merits, a lot of blessing. But without understanding or wisdom, you don't purify your mind. When you confront the First Noble Truth reality of old age, sickness and death, you can still suffer because you still deludedly attached, cling. And you can still be possessive. You can still grasp and cling onto the phenomenal world, not understanding what they are. So that's why purification of mind is a necessity for you to complement life, because materialistic success or wealth not enough, status not enough. Without wisdom, your life is incomplete. You still suffer. So cultivation is about a complete understanding. Complete understanding means you not only avoid evil, all evil do good, you purify your mind. So when you come to cultivation, you do it with understanding. If you can just develop that, you are walking the path of Dhamma because you take care of your karma. Karma take care of your life. In future, when you come, you have a lot of good condition. That's why the Buddha teaches pre-puja to create affinity with Triple Gem, to develop the 10 meritorious action, to cultivate the spiritual faculty, to overcome the 5 mental hindrance. So this puja is very important. Then the closing puja invoke power of these merits for causes and conditions for you to avoid the foolish, the heedless, meet up with the wise and the enlightened one, so that Nibbana can be realized in the here and the now sooner. And this is how you cultivate yourself. That's how you determine through power of merits, power of goodness, wholesomeness. That's why you need karma, strong karmic inheritance. You need to avoid all evil, do good. And you are not serious about that, forget about cultivation. You go and meditate, I tell you, no use. You cannot take care of your life. Noble Eightfold Path not there. You can avoid all you will do good means you will have right view. First Noble Eightfold Path factor, leading to right thought. You will not have negativity of thought. You will not have envy, jealousy, deceiving thought, cunning thought, desire, lust, and all those things. You will not have them. You will have a lot of kindness, goodness, gentleness, honesty, sincerity, patience, respect, gratitude, all this virtue will arise. So when you cultivate accordingly, you will have right thought leading to right speech, right action, the way you communicate, the way you act, you are very different. But you see the danger in violating this nature's law of karma, the first right view. Then after that, you will move into the second right view. Right view really regards to the mind. And you know that your mind, like the Buddha said, is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So we choose to take care of mind. That's why you have to train your mind to develop the spiritual faculty of sati, mindfulness, to be aware, constantly aware, so that you can be aware of your mental intention behind your action, speech, and thought process. And this is how you cultivate. You say you keep your precept, but you lack awareness. Means what? You are using thought to suppress your action and speech. Understand? You can't even be aware of the mental intention behind what you want to do. So how can you keep your precept? That's why you're supposed to undertake the training rule to train your mind not to do all those things, to abstain from killing, stealing, sexual misconduct and all those things. Are you training yourself? Are you developing all this? This is real cultivation. That's why when you don't have a clear understanding of this Buddha Dhamma, you cannot start. Then when it comes to the mind, like the Buddha said, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, if you are heedless, if you don't train your mind to be heedful, to be ever mindful, then this mind will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind, full of all the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Then what happened? Suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follows the hood. Your life, you decide how you want to live. If you choose to be heedless, you do not want to train your mind, then suffering will follow you. Then don't complain. But if you understand this teaching, you understand the importance of training your mind to be ever mindful, heedful, to see your mental intention, so that every moment of action, speech, and thought process, you have this wholesome mind state of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. Then what happened? Happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So if you act, speak, and think with a wholesome mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, you will be happy. You will be peaceful. That's how you improve your life. Then after that, you can even develop mindfulness or the four foundations of mindfulness. Then you can see how you function as a human being, dependent origination. Then you can insight into phenomena to realize the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, non-self or empty nature. Then your mind liberate. Then you can reach the third right view, which is right view regards to the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught. That's why it's called Dhamma Niyama. The first one is Kama Niyama, then Citta Niyama, then Dhamma Niyama. So all these are related to cultivation. Then when you have this Noble Eightfold Path in mind, you will move on down to right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood. Then next one is right effort. The four right effort to constantly purify. Initially is your thought process. So the first two right effort is against the unwholesome thought. First right effort is to abandon the unwholesome action, speech, and thought that has arisen. Abandon them. To do that, you must be aware, mindful. And you must understand what constitutes wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action. What constitutes the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion? These are the essential Dhamma. You must go into it. If you don't understand them, you cannot cultivate them. Can follow? Yeah? So all these are the important cultivation based on understanding of the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha. They are called evil roots because they are the root of all evil. Then when you know selfishness is an evil root, craving, lust, possessiveness, then anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, fear, worry, anxiety, all these are evil root, root of all evil, make you evil, bring about coming downfall. So if you are aware of this mind state, like your anger, you don't root them out, right effort to abandon them, the one that has arisen, what will happen? That is an evil root, root of all evil. It will kill you, understand? It will make you evil. They are also called the three poisons. That's why spiritually you will be killed. You are dead. Then they are called evil root. You become evil. You will violate the karma, the precept. Your karmic nature will fall. That's how you fall. That's how your life go downhill. You cannot improve your life. You cannot have the good life, the noble life. So all this understanding is very important. That's why the right effort to abandon is very important. That as you develop this stability to abandon, you will come to see them before they arise. Then you can arise the right effort to prevent them from arising. The wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. Then the other two right effort is to promote your goodness, your kindness, your virtue, the right thought that are still not in you, the right speech that are still not in you, the gentle, pleasant, and good, appropriate speeches that bring about harmony, love, understanding, that are still not in you. You have to cultivate them through right effort. Then finally, the last right effort is to refine upon all this virtue or goodness that you have already developed. But because you have not perfected them, you have to refine upon them until it becomes a part of you, until this thing becomes a very natural response, until you are incapable of negativity. This is what cultivation is all about. You cannot reach this level of understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. Your pariyatti, first phase of Dhamma, you have not done enough. It's only when you have done enough of this, you see the importance of the Buddha Dhamma, the right view, you only can develop the actual cultivation, the actual development of virtue and wisdom.
The cultivation leading to perfection and the phase two of the Dhamma is very important. That's why the basis behind is phase one. That's why I say spend more time understanding this teaching. Do not think I repeat, because it doesn't go in most of the time. That's why it has to be repeated. And if after repeating also cannot go in, then I wish you all the luck. And I say, means you are not serious. If you are serious, like what happened to me in 1971. The moment I saw the Four Noble Truths, I never turned back. Even as a student, I cultivate. That time nobody taught me. But I was dead serious because I tell myself, my life, I have to be responsible. I will never allow this to happen to me. Without this understanding, my life will fall. I will become miserable. And not only this life, every life, if I have to come or I choose to come, I will be in trouble. That's why I realized the importance of karma, to take care of karma, to follow the advice of the Buddha, unwavering. All evil you have to avoid. Do good, purify your mind. Then, whatever thing that you have developed through this, even you don't go for retreat or don't get serious in meditation, you are already way beyond those who went for retreat and meditation without understanding. Because they can't even understand what Noble Eightfold Path is. They may think their fantastic meditation and experience have transformed them and they have become enlightened. But they are still very crude in the way they live life. They don't have the Noble Eightfold Path factor with them. They are far away from the noble ones that the Buddha talked about. So this is what I want to cover and focus on tonight. Okay? So with this, I will end my tonight sharing. Yeah.
Any questions? Yes, any question?
I think Brother Gan got a few questions. He forward a few. If you got any question, you can just put up your hand. Anything you're not clear, you can ask. Don't worry. I try to get hold of Brother Gan's questions. Ah, yeah, I have here. He was asking how to effectively invoke the power of truth. I already explained just now. You have to develop the understanding and the cultivation. Then when you see the importance and the power of merits and wholesomeness, power of truth, then when condition is such, is appropriate or right, you can invoke the power of truth. And it's very powerful. It's part of nature's law. But you have to develop the understanding. Otherwise, you cannot. You cannot just follow the gata, maha jaya mangala gata. The Buddha said this, I repeat. Cannot, no effect, I tell you. Because he was able to do it, because this thing happened to him. He developed it at that time. So with that understanding he invoked, it happened. It can actually come about. Even Angulimala Paritta, same. If you don't have parami like Angulimala, very difficult. But if you recite his paritta chanting with faith, then it can bring forth some good vibration and condition. But of course not as powerful as the person who really behind it. Okay, then the second question is, what are the difference between universal truth and Buddha Dhamma? This one I already explained in that. Universal truth are nature's truth. They include the scientific truth, physical order of nature. That's why all physical law follow that nature's law. scientific law, like physics, chemistry. They follow the nature's law, or they call it the physical law, or utu niyama, the Buddha called. Then there is this biological order, or bija niyama, where all of your biology, medical science, genetic engineering, and all those things, everything that has to do with biological forms, like animal, plants, human being, or whatever that has this biological composition. They follow this biological law. These are scientific law. But the Buddha is more interested in spiritual law. Spiritual law that can allow you to understand his spiritual teaching, that allow you to understand the spiritual field, which is beyond the scientific field. He talked about consciousness, he talked about the mind. Then he talked about nature's law that governs life and existence, the psychological aspect, the spiritual aspect. So that's why Buddha Dharma is different from universal truth. But universal truth, part of it is the Buddha Dharma. But Buddha Dharma is very different because these are truth based on the wisdom developed by a fully enlightened being like the Buddha, Sammasambuddha. So once they develop this understanding, then they can proclaim the Dhamma. This Dhamma which was there before them, they can re-proclaim for you so that you can understand what they are. Then their focus is on the spiritual law. That's why the Buddha Dhamma is very unique. It allows you to understand life, the secret of life, both mundane and the supramundane aspect. But it is not interested in scientific law and all those things. That one, he leave it to the scientists. The next question is there any difference in karma when a Buddhist and a non-Buddhist who practice the same good deed? What do you think? You think karma got discriminated? You Buddhist, more point. You non-Buddhist, less point. Where got such thing? But what I think he want to ask is, you have this Buddhist understanding, then both can do good deed, no? But the merit is far apart. You know the condition behind that. The Buddha mentioned the highest merits is what? You must have three conditions. When you do somanasa sahagatang, jnana sambayutang, asangkalikang, you have three conditions like that. Your merits is the highest. Somanasa, like the Malay word, sumanasa, sumamasa, all at all time. Sahagatang, you must be happy at all time, before you do, when you do, and after you do, you have joy, you have happiness. That is the first criteria. Then, jnana. Jnana means you do with understanding, wisdom. Means the action, whatever good deeds that you have performed, you have done it with your understanding of the nature's law, you have right view. You don't have craving or desire for the merits. You don't go and do because you want the merit and understand that. Means your action is out of what? Out of greed for that merit. Understand that. So whatever action that you do that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, or delusion, means tinted greed. The desire to do good because of merit is the greed for that merit. So that good merits which you think when you do will give you the good merits, that itself is a craving. So your action is based on what? Based on greed behind. But you do because there is condition to do, and you understand that this is in accordance with nature's law. I'm not worried about good karma. I want to avoid negativity. Then I want to make sure condition is such that if I were to develop all this virtue and wholesomeness, it become naturally stored in my karmic nature. And this karmic nature is like my future life's inheritance. That's why the Buddha said we are all born of it, air to it, conditioned, supported by it. So you just do. Do with understanding. Do with sincerity. No greed, no desire. When you got condition to do, you just do. That's how that merit is different. Then asangalika means spontaneous. You don't wait for people to prompt you. Hey, this one very good. Oh, this monk very good. Oh, you must make offering. So prompted means somebody tell you. Then only is it true. Serious. Okay, I believe you. I do. You think how much merit does it bring? It does bring merit, but you are not being spontaneous. Spontaneous means what? You see the situation warrants it. The condition is such. Then you just want to do. That's it. Finish. You got no second thought on, understand? That's not spontaneous. You just do because condition is there. And some people do with joy or not. When they got opportunity to do, they jump for joy and they just do spontaneously. When I was young, I like that one. When I see something, I really want to do it, I will do it. And I do with understanding and joy. Mm-hmm. So this is where the difference can be. Then I think you got two more questions. How to balance in practicing self-reliance and compassion? You understand the question? I don't understand the question. You say, how to balance in practicing self-reliance and compassion? Brother, did he tell you what he want to know? He just WhatsApp to you. If I don't get him wrong, I think what he meant is this. How to balance in practicing self-reliance? You cannot practice self-reliance. Understand? Self-reliance means what? You rely on yourself. Like the Buddha said, no one help you but yourself. No one may and no one can. Then what you do? You yourself must walk the path. Buddha merely show the way. Buddha merely show the way. So, this is self-reliance, understand or not? Nobody can actually make you enlightened. You have to awaken yourself. You have to walk the path of Dhamma yourself. You have to cultivate yourself. The Buddha only show you the way. Like what I did, I share with you this understanding. It's up to you, your life. You have to determine. It's just like eating a meal. I cannot eat on your behalf. You won't get full. I can tell you, wow, delicious just now, the dish. We had a nice dinner. But because you didn't eat, you only hear lao nua. Then you cannot get feel. Then you say, oh, next time better follow Brother Theodo Friday Dhamma talk. can have all the good parami to get the good food. Then you come. But if you come and you are sincere, then you will know, oh, really, our condition is such. They always have good food. And then you get the taste, but don't overeat. Don't indulge. So this is what self-reliance means. So if I don't get him wrong, he wants to balance between, like, you determine and cultivate yourself, understand not? Where you rely everything on yourself. So to him, like, he got no time to become compassionate, no? Understand not? If you are very compassionate, means what? You want to help other people, isn't it? Huh? Because you are very compassionate. You want to make sure other people are okay. They're out of love and compassion. You go out and help people. You sacrifice, you do all this. Then he said, self-reliance, no, I must practice myself, I must cultivate myself, no. I really got time to do all this. So he said, how to strike a balance? This question comes from the thought. The thought is selfish one. You see the point or not? The thought always say, I want to practice. I practice self-reliant. I never got time to be compassionate. Then the thought say, find out from Brother Theo, see how to balance the practice. Compassion is part of the practice, asana, and cultivation. But compassion cannot be practiced. That is the problem. You understand? Do good. You cannot practice to do good, asana. Try to do good. Who is doing good? The thought is doing good. Good according to who? According to your views, your opinion, your conditioning. What type of good is it? If you are still deluded, it's deluded good. Understand? That's why without wisdom and right view, you cannot have right thought. That's why you must straighten your view. So don't try to cultivate or practice good or do good or practice compassion. No such thing. You must understand the absence of evil is good. When you are incapable of evil, you are already good. And you will already be very compassionate, very loving, very gentle, very pleasant. Because you are incapable of selfishness, the negative tendency. So the absence of evil is good. That's why the Buddha said, if you avoid all evil, you will automatically become good. You understand? Yeah? That's why all evil has to be avoided. When you avoid all evil, automatically you will have virtue, you will have goodness. You have kindness. That self-reliance is a very natural response because you realize you cannot rely on anybody for salvation. You have to rely on your own form and mind. It is the form and mind which is deluded, self-delusion. When it relax, develop the awareness and insight into phenomena, then when it realizes its own self-delusion, that's why this mind ceases. Relinquish and liberate. The mind realizes itself and free. If the mind doesn't realize its own selfishness, its own delusion, possessiveness, it can never liberate. But it will think that is the right way to live life. That is the right way to cultivate. But they use thought a lot. But when you don't use thought, when you're silent, then you, through this silent awareness, mindfulness, you start to see your egoic mind creating all these problems for you. How the mind stir and develop the mood, the emotion, the anger, the hatred, the lust, the craving, the fear, the insecurity, and how these become evil. Yeah, these are evil, root of all evil. And this will lead to heedlessness. Then you start to see how all this can cease when I understand. Means I don't have to stir. I don't have to react. Because these are all born of wrong view. Right view means what? Law of karma. I straighten my view. I will never do all these things. Because this is true understanding. Then when I straighten my view, I'm incapable of evil because my life. I understand this law. I do not want to violate this law. It's just like when you know this is a live wire, you touch, you will die. You want to touch or not? You will never touch it. Pay you $1 million or so, you don't want to touch. Why? You got no time to spend. That money can be given to you, but you are already in Malay, they got hangus. Severely burned. So, seeing the law of karma is the same. You dare to touch or not? That's why I used to tell a lot of cultivators, it's never worthwhile. You will reach a point in the cultivation where you will know that these precepts, law of karma, is never worthwhile to violate because you have to pay a lot more. And it keeps on showing to you one. Especially when you cultivate until you are very near the awakening already. It keeps on coming back and show to you one that you cannot violate one, this law. That's why they say even the Sotapanna is incapable of breaking the five precepts. So you think that cultivation is very easy, But when you understand, it's not difficult. It's pretty easy. That's why you must cultivate with understanding, not just follow, believe, become gullible. Okay? So last question. In Buddha Dharma, does it mean one should renounce to realize the ultimate truth? What do you think I asked you back? You heard all this, isn't it? They say it's in the star. No, I don't know. I got to ask Brother Te. He said, you become arahant. Within 7 days, you don't become monk or renounce. You will die. If the arahant that the Buddha talked about is so fragile, I don't want to become. Understand? It's not what people think. I don't know whether it's stated in the sutta or not, but it's not important to me. Understand? Because to me, renunciation means two different things. If the rope make you a monk, that is not what I believe. That is the tradition. You wear a rope, they call you a monk. If you renounce, it's your heart that renounce. Inwardly you renounce. It's not what you wear. You can shave your hair, but you can violate all your monk's precepts. That doesn't make you a monk. And my teacher used to tell me, if the rope make you a monk, then I tie the rope around the tree, the tree also become monk. Understand? So it's the inner cultivation, the heart, the renunciation is within. When inside has wisdom, understanding, it has the renunciation. That's why renunciation is a parami, it's a perfection. You can cultivate renunciation. Okay? So, any more questions?
I think the question of having attained arahanthood, one has to renounce within 7 days. it's most likely it is a commentator's opinion.
Oh, from the commentary.
I think so. Also, there were instances, or at least there was one that I know, where there was this king's queen. The king. I can't remember the king's name. There was his wife, the queen. She was very attached to her own beauty. I think the incident is that the when the king went to see the Buddha, the queen will always avoid the Buddha because the Buddha would criticize about woman's beauty. So anyway, somehow the queen was within visible distance, like from the Buddha, and the Buddha knew her temperament and created a woman, very beautiful woman, young and was friendly. So the queen saw the woman was so beautiful, and eventually that creation began to
decay,
grow old, and eventually collapse. And I think due to this scenery, the queen obtained arahanthood. So the king later on told the Buddha, saying that no, my wife do not always like to come and all those. So the king said that your wife is now an arahant. So do you permit her to renounce?
The Buddha told the king.
And if not, I think the queen will die within that 24 hours. So I think it probably might be the conditions at that time. Because if you are a queen, naturally people will respect you and this and that, you know, certain kind of
could responsibilities. Could be.
So, I don't think she being an arahant, you know, you would not be able to live like a layman's way and all those. The thinking.
Depend, because she's a royalty. But whatever it is, I don't think if the queen, according to the Buddha, is a real arahant, she will not die because she's an arahant within 7 days. Even when she's not an arahant, she will not die. But because the parami is such, if she don't renounce, maybe the time is up for her. Understand not? Because there can be such condition. If the life force, the karmic force, is already up. Because sometimes after they develop this type of understanding, then they are in the royalty. Then they see there is no more meaning to strive and all those things. Then they can decide to parinibbana. Yeah. It's not necessary they will commit suicide, no such thing, or they will die due to something. No, yeah, their mind is liberated. They cannot die just like that. If it's so fragile, who wants to become arahant? Asana? Then doesn't mean you wrap the rope around her, she will not die. So the renunciation process maybe will bring forth meaning for her to continue her life as an arahant because she sees meaning there. Otherwise, she prefer to parinibbana because the king will not understand. The king say, "You are my wife, no? Oh, I want to have you for the night. You have to obey, you know? Otherwise, they say satawa, joy." Yeah. So I don't know. Really, I don't know. Could be the reason, but not important, Sana. I can assure you, even after you arahant or enlightened or what, you are not so fragile. You will have a lot of understanding, and you know this is not you, Sana. So who die? What die? Why must there be a death? There is no such thing. When it realizes the truth, it's not deceived by the phenomenal world. The whole of the phenomenal world become very clear. And it's very different. They can do things that normal human being cannot do. Understand? Like there was a story, there was a lady arahana. There was a, I don't know, boyfriend or monk, I don't know what, like her a lot. Say, "You are very pretty, really, I want to marry you." Then he say, "Which part of me is pretty?" "Your eye is very beautiful, very pretty." So she just took her eye out and gave it to him. He got a shock of his life after that. He never come back. So they can do things that nobody can understand. But to them, this is just form, understand or nothing. But there must be condition behind. Otherwise, they won't just do this. Because I think past life affinity, they must have been husband and wife before. But then she's so insistent that life. Then out of good to like clear up the thing once and for all. She just did. Or maybe she got psychic, I don't know. Take out, then after that can put back. We don't know. Okay, any more questions? We are getting late already. Any more questions? Otherwise, we can stop. Okay? Okay, maybe we will do the sharing of merits. Okay, we will chant the Pali. Sharing of merits. Your token of appreciation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Chwakao. So this time, I think, big one. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Every chance. So again, donate back to your society. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakantu loka sasana eta wata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patiya sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu. Keep in respect mindfully to Lord Buddha and all the worthy ones. Thank you.